This exception that's found in 2001-081 kind of seems like a little bit of a get-out-of-jail-free card. It's a little bit of a, hey, we're going to follow the rules unless there's maybe something that the judge really wants to hear, and the rules absolutely don't disallow it, and we think a prudent person, you know, might rely on that. One of the things that comes to mind here is just hearsay, you know, different types of hearsay that might not have, be allowed in under the regular rules of evidence. You know, there are things let's just be honest, we rely on hearsay all the time, right, in our daily lives. So for the practitioner, I think Sue's point with respect to this slide largely was, hey, if you don't think the rules allow it, but you think you have something that would be really important and really beneficial for your case, one of the things that you might consider is trying to make a case to fit it in under Section 2001-081. So again, we're typically gonna follow our rules. The reason that Sue has this in here is we typically want to make sure that we disclose things, but there are some exceptions. So typically speaking, if you fail to disclose evidence you're going to use, you're not going to be able to use that evidence when you present your case. There are some exceptions if you show good cause, but then there are some other exceptions that aren't necessarily spelled out so clearly, and I think this is one that Sue really wanted to talk to you about. Sue actually had an eminent domain case involving a landowner where the landowner in that case had made some very questionable investment decisions with other people's money for a period of time, which resulted in him losing his license to manage other people's money. And she thought that maybe that would go to the veracity of the testimony that witness might offer on a variety of subjects. She knew that. She had figured that out in doing her research on this individual. But she did not disclose that information. And the law really allows that. With respect to cross-examination, you can go into the witness's interests, bias, motives, inclinations, and prejudice, and you don't really have to disclose that. So in this case, this is the individual in question. This is him testifying before, I think, a House Select Committee investigating his wrongs. That turned into a big deal in that case. But ultimately, the rules allowed her to utilize that information that she had not disclosed prior on cross-examination, really to go after the veracity of the witness. So there are some exceptions to the disclosure rule. But when in doubt, if you have evidence that you think you want to use under the rules of evidence, you need to disclose it. This transition really is, hey, if you are at the final hearing stage, you have a lot of goals that you are going to want to try to accomplish. And the way that you utilize objections ultimately should be fitted to those goals. This is just our joke. You know, do we want to be loved or hated? And you know, maybe we want to accomplish everything. Maybe we want to be loved and hated, or loved or hated for how much we're loved, right? And so the concept here is that we really need to categorize the things that are going to be important to us in our case, and then build all of our case around that, including the ways in which we may object, and specifically the ways in which we're going to utilize our time. Because at these hearings, more often than not, the administrative law judge is going to give each party a certain amount of time. In the case that Sue recently had, one of the edicts, and I think this part of this may have been because this was the second time around for this case. So one of the edicts that they were given by the judge who had lived through it the first time around was, if you're going to make long-winded kind of speaking objections, just know that those are going to count against your time. And this is Sue's joke. You know, your time in any sort of litigation really is precious, and so we need to make sure that we allocate it appropriately. In addition to making objections to protect your case, one of the other reasons that you need to make objections really is to preserve error in case we're going to take our case up, in case we're not happy with the result and we need to appeal. If you don't preserve error to evidence that you find objectionable, if you don't make an objection and get a ruling on that objection, you're kind of just out of luck. And so, again, as we are weighing what's important to us, there are, you know, there's maybe sometimes we think, well, it's not going to be really important for me right now to make this objection. This could be a waste of time. It may still be important for you to do that just because you need to preserve error on that issue. Any objection made in any case really needs to be timely and specific. One of the things that repeatedly happened, I think, and some of you may be familiar with this case that Sue and Ben Rim and Ali Al-Bazari at our firm had, but one of the things that repeatedly happened in this case was that opposing counsel continued to make objections in that case, and he would just say objection form, right? Well, objection form is fantastic for a deposition. We all have to actually say that, right, if we are taking a deposition. But objection form in, you know, kind of when the bullets are real, in regular litigation or at a final hearing, it doesn't mean anything. You need to state the actual basis for which you are lodging your objection. The other thing that apparently happened a lot in this case was, you know, based on the testimony kind of being known somewhat in advance, you may kind of know where you're opponent is going to go with the testimony, and sometimes what happens with that is you are a little jumpy on when you make your objection. The proper time to lodge an objection is after the question was asked. So, in this case, you know, the objection came a little bit early. For any of you that know Sue, and I do have some good stories on Sue. Maintaining control, and I think she would take this as a compliment. Maintaining control is a big deal to Sue. It's something that she certainly prides herself on within our practice group, and then also, you know, within a case. And it's very important to keep everything on task.